Give me warp in the factor of
5, 6, 7, 8.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. And today we're going to be talking all about the announcement, the news of the announcement of upcoming Star Trek Day celebration, and maybe even talking a little bit about what I think is a glaring omission, which is no Prodigy. Now, you know, we can talk about this for days. Pulled from the service, ostracized, the redheaded stepchild. I'm Clarence, and also on the podcast today, we have our co-host, Last Trekkie, starting with none other than Kyle Jones. How you doing, man?
You know, as always, glad to be here to talk to the two of you, and looking forward to talking about speculation. So, speculation's always good, because you can go any direction with speculation.
And also on the podcast, we have Larry Irby. How you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you?
No complaints, man. Glad to be here.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel to all decks.
Well, let's get right into it. So Paramount is having yet another fourth annual Star Trek Day. And the presser reads, join fans from around the world for the annual Star Trek Day global celebration on Friday, September 8th. This year's special program is hosted by Star Trek Lower Decks Jerry O'Connell on Paramount Plus and features special Star Trek Lower Decks screening across the U.S. in anticipation for the upcoming fourth season and a special airing on CBS of Strange New Worlds. So do you guys usually get amped up for Star Trek Day? It's kind of mostly a new thing 4 years in. Also, do you wish other franchises did something like this?
Interesting, maybe sort of, but not really, because I don't feel like now there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. You know, if there was, oh, well, we're about to hear about a new show. Now, we may hear about a new show. We don't know that yet. That's speculation. But considering the fact in the last year we've had a lot of endings and no announcements of a lot of beginnings, then maybe that's a good reason to watch this. But if there's not a lot of announcements, then that makes me wonder and speculate, will there be a fifth annual Star Trek Day?
Larry, we have strikes going on, man. What do you think about Star Trek Day? Is there going to be any announcements, any upcoming new series announcements or anything? Or is this going to be the, right before the storm of not having Trek for a little while because they're not producing much right now. So what do you think?
The big thing is, who knows? As Tom Baker said in the special, who knows? Because, I mean, we really don't. What do they have in the can already? We know Lower Decks is good to go. I don't think they had started shooting Strange New Worlds season 3 yet. Prodigy is apparently not there anymore. Discovery's ending. The only thing we really got is this rumored Academy show. So I think they're going to play it close to the vest, because the real thing is they don't even know when they're going to be able to get back to work. So I don't think they're going to want to promise stuff that especially they can't deliver on.
Very good point. You know, and I'm thinking, after I made the comment about new shows, I had completely forgotten about the writer strike. So that makes my comment kind of retro in the sense, or retroactive, need to kind of retcon my comment and saying, I don't know how hard it would be, or how I wouldn't want to be in their shoes trying to make us excited about the content, but having this limbo of not being able to know when we can start creating content again.
Hello to Wingrace and Tasha in the chat. And Wingrace has a good question, which I don't know the answer to this, so we'll bring it up and see if you guys have any idea. What happened to the Khan audio drama they announced last year at Star Trek Day? I do remember that, but mom's the word. I haven't heard anything else about it.
I haven't.
Maybe a lot of people got really mad about it. And then, you know, they were like so wrathful. And
look at you. Look at you. Play on words there, sir.
Thank you.
But for me, I would hope there would be something new. It's kind of hard because of kind of like we mentioned, the place we are with Star Trek right now. So and even, you know, going back to what my thumbnail kind of shows, scrubbing Prodigy completely from all existence here forth, I think it's going to be interesting to see what they announce, if anything. It also makes me think, would there ever be a scenario where we bring shows back out of the grave? Do we run Picard for another season? Maybe turn that into legacy, you know, do something there and spin it off. You know, this is Discovery's last season. I wonder if there's a chance that we could, you know, do something with that show going forward to maybe have another season, or is it totally written off? Those kind of questions pop into my mind, especially when you talk about the, you know, how hard it is to start from scratch. And that's what a lot of these new shows will be doing.
But one thing we brought up in the past is Discovery season 6, your overhead for the actors, as opposed to new show season 1 with a lot of unknowns. It's cheaper because they're not known yet.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
You've got your one or two named person, but for the majority, you know, we didn't know who, for the most part, we didn't know who Mary Wiseman.
Yeah,
we didn't know who she was before then. You know, we Oscar Isaacs. Well, no, that's the wrong one.
Jason Isaacs
had the last name right. Yeah, but you see my point.
I don't know, man. I can beg the difference. They had a lot of really big names on this show. Michelle Yeoh, Jason Isaacs.
Good point.
Nicole Martin Green was relatively. She was getting popular, but she was relatively unknown. And you have Anthony Rapp. People know him for Rent.
Yep. True. Good point.
Especially now, you got to remember. Sonequa Martin Green was huge because The Walking Dead she was on the most popular show on the face of the planet.
And she was on there when it was really, 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 really hot. Really
good, still kind of a bubble, because if you didn't watch Walking Dead, you didn't know who she was. She wasn't universal.
Well, but it's not about the zombies. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I didn't want to watch it, but it was turned out to be awesome. There's more Star Trek people on there. We had my girl show up, of course, Denise Crosby. You can't get away from Star Trek, man. We are universal.
So when Grace Mays is coming here, they could do a whole season of mental gymnastics to explain Calypso. I want to highlight the comment just because I think they could do more short treks. We have all these sets and stuff that aren't being used. Of course, you have to have good writing, but I think we can have more short treks would be very good. And as Tasha is saying here in the chat, we never got the payoff for Calypso. So I want the payoff for that short. I want more Aldous Hodge, second of all. So if we could get more of him, that would be awesome as well. Let's get into the actual programming of the day of Star Trek Day. So on September 8th, fans worldwide can watch Star Trek Day, again, hosted by Jerry O'Connell. And the items that they're going to feature on the programming, on the special programming, is going to include segments that look back at memorable moments over the past 57 years, commemorate 50 years of Star Trek animation, pay tribute to Star Trek Discovery ahead of its final season. Going to be interesting what they do with that. Provide an exclusive sneak peek from the beginning of the fourth season of Lower Decks, and many other highlights from Star Trek's legacy.
I'm curious if there will be more people like me. And what I mean by that is people who had turned off Lower Decks, but maybe are willing to give it a second chance because they saw those two characters on Strange New Worlds and are a little bit more open to revisiting Lower Decks again. So I'm really curious if I were seeing viewing numbers to see if there's at least initial hike. It may be all across season 4, but I'm curious to see if the positivity they received from the Strange New Worlds crossover transitions into higher viewing figures for Lower Decks. Because I have a more open mind. You know, I'm not making Lower Decks jokes. I've not made a Lower Deck joke since they appeared on Strange New Worlds. So that says a lot, in my opinion.
Well, I think the added thing with Lower Decks, it's a niche on top of a niche. You already have the niche of Star Trek, and then you're putting like adult animation on top of that. I don't know how big the addressable market for that is in the beginning anyway. Now, you have the added caveat that you could bring in some people who aren't Star Trek fans anyway, so you have that. But to me, it kind of shrinks the audience, not grows. I could be totally wrong on that, but I would like to see Nielsen numbers, if it even ranks. Because Strange New Worlds has been doing very well in that aspect, and so did the last season of Star Trek Picard. Larry, were there any items from the day that interested you, these memorable looks, tributes to Discovery, or peaks at Lower Decks season 4? Anything interest you on this list?
Well, of course, Discovery. I love that show. I know the show was polarizing to some people. Whatever. I don't care. I mean, I can care what I like. And what if I like it, I'm going to go with. And I loved Discovery. It's not to say I didn't have gripes about things, but I did that with any. I mean, so like, again, retrospect is a lot. You know, when you look at things in hindsight, I mean, you know, Michael Jordan never missed a shot in his entire career in the NBA. If you listen to people now talk about the legacy, and we know that Star Trek, Next Generation, Original Trek, Deep Space Nine, Void, they all had bad episodes.
Yeah. Bad seasons.
More than one. But, you know, But overall, I want to see that show get the love it deserves, because there are tons of us who love that show.
Yeah.
You know? And so I look forward to them getting the props they deserve. And I hope that maybe they give us another sneak peek of something that they haven't given us in the trailers. You know, that would be nice. Because, you know, I'm really looking forward to, hopefully they'll stay. I like the fact that Trek is that far in the future, because you're just away from everything else and you can kind of create, you know, what you want to. So that interests me. And just seeing all of them get on stage and talk about what the year, I mean, because a lot of these shows, we got to remember, were still being filmed when there were COVID, you know, COVID protocols.
That's true.
And so now for them, you know, it's like looking back at that's going to be like, oh yeah, look what all we had to go through while we were shooting. On top of shooting, we had to go through all these protocols and daily testing. And
yeah, that might be interesting. This might be the first season in Discovery, might be the first season we had in a while that was unrestricted by COVID.
So let me ask you this, Clarence, and we're asking both of you this question. Does Star Trek, the marketing engine, not the producers or whatever, do they send out a lot of social media posts with tidbits, you know, trying to market, and do, or is it more focused? Okay, here's Star Trek Day.
I think they do a little bit of both. I think lately they've been trying to create memes. So I've been seeing a lot of posts on Instagram from them that would show a particular scene, and they'd have a caption that tried to make it funny. I don't know. They're trying to memeify Trek a little bit, which I kind of think that's what all the Paramount Plus properties are trying to do, to stir up, you know, this talk and this virality that's not naturally there. So I don't know. It's to me, their socials and the things they post really don't ever jump out at me, unless it is an announcement about, you know, a clip from a show. They have interesting stuff while the season is going on. I love the Star Trek Discovery captain's logs that they did. I think they may have did that in the final season of Picard too. So some of the stuff is really rewarding, but some of the stuff, you know, it's like, okay.
I'll tell you something that I've noticed they're trying to do, and this is nothing bad. I mean, if you see something done well, you want to do Star Wars Celebration. You know, I think they've tried to take a little bit from that, only with Star Trek, because Star Wars Celebration brings back everybody.
Yeah.
Not just people from current shows. And I think that's what I was really happy about the last time, because we got to see Kate Mulgrew, and we got to see, you know, a lot of people from past shows that maybe we hadn't seen those actors in a while. And that was very nice for me.
You know, I thought they were going to go down the Star Wars Celebration path when they started doing the missions. They had Mission Chicago 1 year, I think. Then they were supposed to have Mission Seattle the next year, and it got canned. And since then, we haven't really heard anything. So it would be interesting to see them do that, but I don't know if there's the will or the money behind it to actually pull that off.
Yeah. You know, I think you've hit on something in the regards of, is there the money? Because we've got, number one, you know, there's the thing that we've already talked about, the writers, you know, strike and the actors strike. So that's shrinking their content. And then number two, you know, everybody keeps talking about, is the streaming bubble about to burst?
Yeah, true. It probably has already burst.
Yeah. If not, it's leaking.
It's going to happen, because like we said, I look at myself as a prime example. I have shows right now. I have two shows on Netflix, about to be three. They saw the Zack Snyder thing for his new thing coming out.
Yeah,
so I got to see that. I got two on Apple that I'm obsessed with. You know, I got some on Prime. I got some on, and it's just like, oh my God, I cannot, and Disney Plus, and I was like, I cannot pay for all of this.
It does add up. Let me pick up a few comments. Let's start with Dreamwalker talking of Sonequa Martin-Green. I saw her on Walking Dead, and I knew Jason Isaacs from several things, including the short-lived NBC show Awake. And when Grace is saying that was a good show, I've never seen Awake. I don't know if I've even heard of Awake. I think for me, I kind of knew of Jason Isaacs from Harry Potter, but this is the first thing I really saw him really, really act in. So yeah, I have to look up Awake. I've never heard of that. Dreamwalker says again, it's amazing we haven't seen any Discovery since before Picard season two aired. It's been a long time, man. It's been a really long time. And when did they finish filming the current season? It has to have been a while by now. And I don't know if they've just got pushed down because of the other productions that were already in the pipeline. But man, it's been a while since we've had Discovery. So I'm glad it's about to come back. Oh, yeah. And Wingrace mentions the animated Short Trek. There were two, actually, I think. I think there was one with the little girl, and I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, that's the one about Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was one, Ephraim and Dot, which was really cool because they showed like some cool scenes of the Enterprise on that. Some throwback to some TOS stuff. I thought that was pretty cool as well. So let's go into the next little part of this presser, saying that CBS Television Network to broadcast the first two episodes of the hit original series, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. They're going to air episode one, or the premiere, Strange New Worlds, and also episode two, which is Children of the Comet. Now, I believe they did this with Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
Is this, well, I'm going to ask you guys, a good move for the franchise? Are we just doing it because the writers are on strike, the actors on strike, and we need something to fill the gaps? Thoughts on airing Strange New Worlds on CBS?
I think it's a good idea. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it falls right into what you said, Clarence. They're struggling for content. You know, I think that anything that you can do to broaden your horizons or broaden the audience, I think, is a good thing. I think if they're not doing the entire season, you know, that to me is a little missed opportunity, because if you're doing it for the reason I think you're doing it and we think that you're doing it, don't just show the first two episodes, at least show the entire season.
Yeah, because they released the entirety of last season on YouTube. So why not just show it on the air? You know, for me, I feel like there should be more of a back and forth, but synergy, I think is what I'm looking for, synergy between the broadcast network and the streaming network. Why can't they share content? Why can't you just watch it on Paramount Plus with no ads? Now, they do that with some things. They do it with the reality shows, and there's a couple of more shows. Well, actually, a lot of other shows that are on there that you can watch without ads. I don't see why I see why they do it. They want to keep Star Trek in the bubble to make it exclusive. But by the same token, I think that you could bring in a bigger audience if you have it on broadcast television. So I'm always a little iffy with that. I mean, I think they should do it, but why not just do it with everything? Put it on both places. Yeah. And the incentive is to watch it without ads online.
See, I was going to argue that the fact that the only reason they're doing two episodes was they want you to get your appetite wet for what you've watched and then go and subscribe and watch it. And then you burst that bubble by saying they put it on YouTube.
Oh, man. Wingrace just hit me with this comment here, and this kind of made me think here. Hopefully it will give the actors and writers real residuals by airing it on CBS. I wonder, is that the reason they don't air it? If it's like a exclusive streaming series, because they have to pay a lot more money if it's on broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the case.
They do. They absolutely have to pay more money. Like, I'll put it this way. The original Star Trek crew, and I don't know if you guys know this, I feel you may. I've actually been in a room and heard this from themselves. All the people who filmed the original Star Trek got zero residuals. Think about all the times that we've bought Star Trek cassettes, Star Trek DVDs of the original series. It's aired on TV. It's always on TV somewhere. They get zero residuals, nothing from that.
Wow. How is it even legal?
Because that's the way it was back then.
At the time, right, yeah.
And now, like all the Next Generation cast, all of them get residuals from the Next Generation. And so on with all the other Star Trek shows. But, you know, like you said, streaming is a new model. Streaming is just like music streaming is now. Artists, singers, bands, they get like not even close to the amount of royalties they did when it was like hard media, you know, CDs and things. Like you got to get so many streams to even add up to you making any money at all.
And the added caveat I'll add to that is, you know, with, you know, I think Clarence, you referred to the Nielsen ratings, you know, earlier. Well, a lot of streaming services may say this is our top three programs. Well, who verifies that? You know, there's not an independent Nielsen that does just streaming that I am aware of. A lot of this is published by Disney Plus saying these are our top and they, you know, had blah, blah. But who verifies that? Hence, they can then turn around and pay me $4 for my starring role in whatever.
Well, think of this. How many of you I've known in my life, in my whole life, one person, Barbara, who I worked with, she's the only person I've ever known who ever had a Nielsen box in her house. That's it. I've never known anybody else. So I always used to say, how accurate can those ratings be that we know no one who has, who's voting for these shows that determine if a show stays on the air or doesn't stay on the air.
So I found this article. It's on SAGAFTRA.com. I want to see if I can pull it up because it seems pretty interesting here. Let's see if I can get this here because it talks about the history of SAG-AFTRA. So it's the history of residuals starts back the mid 20th century. It's saying by the 1950s, both SAG and AFTRA had been successful in negotiating residuals for TV program reruns. In 1960, what SAG officials feared a decade earlier became reality. Actors still didn't receive a dime for films made by major motion picture studios when those films were licensed to television. So March 7, 1960, Guild members by an 83% vote approved the strike. It was a difficult one. And as the weeks passed, the strike took a serious toll on both sides. Finally, a compromise was reached. The Guild agreed to forego residual payments on films made prior to 1960. So if you had something before 1960, you didn't get residuals. But I guess from here on, well, they say it in an article. In return, producers agreed to pay residuals on films made in 1960 and afterwards. 1974, members jointly negotiated to contract covering primetime dramatic programming. So this gets into the TV. And this is after, you know, Star Trek aired. So 1974, that goes into what you were saying, Larry, about the Star Trek actors didn't get anything. Negotiated contract covering primetime TV and major television networks. Now, this is the one I heard them talk about on Delta Flyers, this 1980 thing. So in 1980 negotiations, SAG and AFTRA members went on strike to get supplemental market residuals from sales in video cassettes and pay TV. So that's the first, I guess, major format change in the 80s going to VHS and pay-per-view, I guess. So, and this is what they were talking about on the Delta Flyers podcast about. It hasn't been really been renegotiated since then. So all the rules they're using now for streaming and all that other good stuff, it's basically this, you know, and it's just saying how, SAG-AFTRA merged in 2012. So I guess interesting that they haven't renegotiated this after all these years. And the landscape is so different than it was in the VHS and pay-per-view days. It's totally different. And we can see why the actors are getting bamboozled on this one.
Well, I'll tell you this. A lot of people, you just brought that up, Clarence, and thank you for finding that article. Because I've heard actors say a lot of people didn't realize videotapes and DVDs, unless you were one of the big names, unless you were Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Meryl Streep or something, you still didn't get any of that money from video sales. You know, they didn't pay everybody. It's like there were lots of lawsuits, and you're not going to find better attorneys than Hollywood studios have, because they get sued all the time. And yeah, there's like, because they consider that video or DVD sales, they consider that icing on the cake. So if a film does really good, you know, or if a film does terrible, hopefully with video sales or now streaming, you break even.
And it makes me wonder, like, what's the real problem? We know that executives are getting a lot of money off these streaming services, but apparently they can't support themselves. So saying that the streaming services can't support themselves. So what's really going on there? Is it just greed ultimately? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the olden days, but literally back in those days, yes, you had all of these different Paramounts and MGMs and 20th Century Fox, Universal, etc. But you didn't have Disney, who then bought Marvel Studios, who then bought Lucasfilm,
yeah,
who then bought, you know, keep going and going, yeah, and going. And you've got, you know, Discovery merging with Warner Brothers. And it does, I think, get into that corporate bottom line greed, which may lead into our Prodigy issue.
We'll go into Star Trek. Think about this. Now, all you have to do is watch the documentary For the Love of Spock. They go into that about how they basically, Paramount goes, yeah, Wrath of Khan was a hit, but it didn't make that much money because we had this happen and this happened and this happened. So we really didn't make any money. And the actors were like, oh, no, And so that they had got into it over that. If the studio can find a way not to pay you, they will.
Do we think that the idea of a loss leader or a tentpole program in streaming on a streaming service, if that idea is going away? I mean, we noticed Paramount was not making money in the beginning. Paramount Plus. You could probably say that Discovery wasn't popular, but for whatever reason, people weren't flocking in droves to sign up for Paramount Plus. So do we think that idea of like a loss leader or a tentpole program for said streaming service is kind of over? Do you just do a bunch of reality shows and things we know people are going to like, low hanging fruit?
I don't think there's an answer to that. And I think that goes a little bit, you know, I think I can elaborate on my non-answer, which is you can never guess when lightning in a bottle is going to just happen. You know, you can have the best idea for a show and then something else come along and it explode and they're basically the same type of show, yeah, same premise, same whatever, but maybe the logo was different and people really liked it, or maybe the actors had a different chemistry and whatnot and they really, really liked it. So I think there can be tent poles, but I think it goes in cycles, maybe more so than tent poles or not. And I'll use comic book movies. You know, I keep hearing over and over and over from people, well, are we oversaturated? Are we now to the point of comic book movie fatigue? That we may well be. And I'm going to frame it into your question. Are we into tentpole show fatigue? Meaning, let's look at Paramount with Yellowstone. Wasn't that the other thing other than Star Trek? I tried watching Yellowstone. I didn't get it. I didn't find the allure, but I know people from all walks of life who absolutely love it. But if I were trying to even get into Yellowstone, am I going into Yellowstone? Am I going into their prequel or their prequel? Or
yeah,
you see where I'm going with that? It's just like, sure, you get something that really, really works. And even with The Walking Dead, you had The Walking Dead and now you've got The Walking Not So Dead and
The Walking Dead
and Dead City and, you know, Who Are We Dead and whatever, yeah. You know.
Let me pick up a few comments from Wynn Grace that kind of backs up what you were saying. First, he's saying the streaming model doesn't work. They have a ceiling of maximum subscribers, so they need to shift from growth model to making money by maintaining. Tasha seconds that notion. And he comes back and says, a show like Star Trek should always be expensive. They need to create all these sets, etc. If they can exist long enough, which again surprises me why they're canceling Discovery, but if they can exist long enough, they can start reusing everything like they did in the classic 90s era. Yeah, they've spent all this money and the show is short-lived. They rebuilt the Enterprise D set and the season is ending. The series is ending. So, yeah, you would think that they would want their streaming shows to go on and on and on. I mean, Walking Dead, speaking of your example, Kyle, Walking Dead has been on for, what, 10 years now and has like 5 spinoffs.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe it's their strategy is what the issue is here.
So let me ask this question to you guys. Would you rather, like, let's take Discovery. You know, we've got the Discovery sets and we've got, would you rather them keep the Discovery set and maybe for whatever reason, the ship gets, some of the people get reassigned, they go do different things, and there's a new captain that comes in and a new crew that comes in, and now it's Discovery, it continues at Star Trek Discovery, but for the most part, the cast has cycled out.
Even with the same cast, I mean, early on, even a couple of years, maybe even last year, if someone asks Sonequa Martin-Green, like, how long do you plan on doing this? And her answer would always be, as long as I can, I love doing it. So as long as the writing is good, you can keep the same cast. I mean, think of how many episodes we have for the 90s era Trek. You know, by comparison, we've done no Star Trek in the new era, you know, because they were doing 24 episodes a season, 7 seasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could fit a couple of, you know, a couple of seasons just will take up like all of Discovery in back in the day. So, yeah, they're just not, the longevity isn't there for all the money they're putting into it on the front end. So I don't know, man. It's hard. It's hard. And I think we're in an era, too, where, you know, going back to what we mentioned up top, Prodigy, the cancellation of Prodigy, they're not giving enough time for something to marinate. They're too quick to say it's not working. And we know the people are going to be there for Star Trek, even if it's not your flavor. It's a flavor for somebody else. You know, I've mentioned that Lower Decks is not really my flavor. We'll talk about that later. But there's a whole bunch of people that love it. And I'm excited about people loving it, you know. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a tough one.
I can't help, and I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, but I can't help but wonder or want to know what is the story behind the story with Prodigy disappearing? Because I think there's more to the story than obviously that we know, because if I were just guessing, and this is not a jab at Lower Decks, but if I were to guess how many people received Prodigy in a positive light as opposed to Lower Decks in a positive light and whatnot, I would think that there would be a lot more merchandising potential. You know, I see all those characters as toys from Prodigy.
They made a very crappy PC game for Prodigy. They've made some mobile games for Lower Decks. So I don't know, man. I just know that Prodigy is probably a much more expensive show to make.
Probably.
And that might be why they got rid of it. Larry, I know you tried to chime in a few times.
Sorry about that. Thoughts?
No, I'm fine. My whole thing with it is, number one, Prodigy, I don't know if this has anything to do with it. I'm like you, Kyle. I think there is something that went on bad. I'm just going to be honest. I do. I think something happened, and we don't know it yet, but it'll come out. But, man, I just lost all interest in Prodigy after they went away and stayed away that long. I watched it, but I just wasn't as into it, you know, as I was before.
Yeah, they did take a long break in between. So
I mean, because who does give you – Prodigy started at the end of that year and went over into the new year, and then didn't come back all the way to the end of the of that year. That's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, agree. Nothing killish. I mean, I'm trying to think. There was a show I love called Flash Forward where everybody passed out in the world, and then they flash forward. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I remember that. Yeah.
You remember that one? Mm-hmm. And they saw the future, right?
Right.
And for some stupid reason, I don't know whose idea it was, they decide we need to wait to the actual day that it happened on to bring the show back. What? And so it was off the air for like literally 5 months. Mm. It was off the air. And when it came back, nobody cared.
Real quick before we move on, Tasha mentions the show Evil that's on Paramount Plus. I've heard a lot of good things about this show. I've never seen it. Is it Mike Coulter?
Michael Coulter.
Yeah. So I've heard it's good. Haven't seen it. And also, Wingrace mentions the show Ghosts, which is a remake of a British version.
Yes. Called the Ghosts. British version. Very rarely do I like both versions, and both versions are equally as good in their own way.
Yeah. I've seen both. They're both pretty good.
I tell Tasha, I love Evil, but I also lost interest in that because it was kind of like, this week you're going to find out what happens. Nah, I ain't going to tell you. Like, what? Come on.
Oh. And in the next piece of news here, Star Trek, the animated celebration is coming to multiple cities in a screening that they're going to have. The animated universe of Star Trek, which began 50 years ago on September 8th with Star Trek, the animated series. This Star Trek Day commemorates the 50th anniversary with an evening of cartoon comedy, including 4 specially selected episodes of the hit animated series, Star Trek Lower Decks. Fans can attend the exclusive free promotional screenings and experience the brand new season of Star Trek Lower Decks on the big screen. The day is jam-packed with sneak peeks, surprises, free concessions, giveaways, and more. This is a can't-miss event for longtime fans of Star Trek and adult animation. So, guys, are any of you guys going to the screening?
But where are the screenings going to be?
Oh, the screenings are going to be in Columbus, Dallas, Denver, Philadelphia, Phoenix, San Diego, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., Vancouver, Calgary, and London.
Pass.
The last time we did this, and I didn't even know it, where I live, one of the movie theaters was the day they did the Doctor Who thing. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're going to have Doctor Who screening. You can go watch the 50th anniversary or whatever it was with Tenet and all of them. And it was right down the street and I didn't know.
Oh, man, dude. Well, let's unpack that for a little bit. Do these screenings even matter? Are they merely what they say, fan events? Or are they meant to drum up some social media virality by being these free events in all these cities? I have my tickets, by the way. I'm going to the one in Dallas. So what are you guys' thoughts, dude? Are these events good for the fandom? And Kyle, I know you might relate this to the Doctor Who stuff that Larry just mentioned.
I'm going to say the Doctor Who stuff, yes. The Star Trek stuff, no. And let me tell you, but let me explain why. The fact that the Doctor Who stuff was much more available to people, regardless of whether or not you lived in a big city or close to a big city like Dallas, or you lived in Podunk, Mississippi.
That's true.
The fact that you were able to go in Mississippi, just like someone in Dallas, to see the Doctor Who, I think that helps make that more of a global fan bringing, you know, to theater event. The fact that you read these cities to me and I'm like, I'm not, you know, even if it was Doctor Who, I'm not traveling, you know, I'm not going to travel hours just to watch something in theaters.
I agree with you on that, Kyle. That because this, it was more accessible.
Yes.
More accessible. And like I said, you know, I don't think it is. I think it's just a fan service thing. But I think it's great if you're a fan who's living in those, you know, big cities and you can go like you're going to. It's terrible that I can't go.
But look at the alternative. If it were more readily available, you know, the conversation that we would be having at this moment is, Clarence, you're telling, you know, Larry, hey, cool, you're going. You guys are telling me, it's like, why aren't you going? Because I said, I'm not going. But we all have the ability to go is my point.
That's true. That's true. I'm excited about seeing the first 4 episodes, though. You know, I'm pretty excited about that. So no spoilers for me, but that's going to be fun.
Well, so you're going to watch it and you're going to enjoy it. You're going to be open-minded.
I'm going to be open-minded. I'm going to try to talk to some folks that's there. I might do a vlog. Who knows?
You know, do some videos.
Oh, that would be cool.
I might try that.
Get to do that a little bit. But yeah, I love Lower Decks. Like I said, Lower Decks is just, it's just a fun time for me. And I always say, if we're Star Trek fans, you got to be able to laugh at yourself. So, and that's what Lower Decks really is for me. It's just a parody of Star Trek with love, with a lot of love, you know. But I can also see that some people may not like it.
But see, the fact of knowing that you like it and that you enjoy it makes me want to watch it, because I want to have somebody to feed off of. Not saying that we were not, you know, feeding off of us and ourselves negatively before, but the fact that knowing that you like it makes me look forward to watching it, because I know you're going to be coming, even if you don't like an episode in particular, your point of view comes from a positive place. And that's cool.
Yeah, you're going to be our Lower Decks correspondent.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. When I watch Lower Decks, guess what?
What's that?
I don't take it seriously.
But it's canon.
It's canon, man. It is, but I have fun. I don't sit there and go, well, you know what? They made that joke. That's actually not true, because on Deep Space Nine, an episode, you know, I'm not sitting there doing that. I'm just laughing. Oh, there's a joke. And somebody said it's just a bunch of reference jokes. Well, yeah.
It is.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
you know, I just wish it was smarter, because I feel like all the jokes, and wow, I don't want to make this a Lower Decks bashing session. I just think some of the jokes are just low hanging fruit. Like, I just went back and watched Grounded. I mentioned it last week. We start off with Boimler getting hit on by every girl in his raisin vineyard. And at the end, we have an orgy by the space things that they couldn't beam into space, the causing interference where they couldn't beam into space. It's just the low-hanging fruit stuff I don't like. I love intelligent comedy. I mean, a show that I thought I would never love is BoJack Horseman. Silly show. But it's smartly written. And I get a little tingle, you know, that Star Trek feeling almost at the end of the episode, because it has like a beginning, end, and a little moral in there. And I don't know if we get that from Lower Decks. We do. I don't mean to crap on it. We do. But I'm just going to remain open-minded this season, because I come in with bias.
Well, here's the thing, too. If you don't like something, as long as you, and this is the problem we have goes on today. If you don't like something, I tell people all the time, there's different things I don't like. Just because I don't like it doesn't mean it shouldn't exist. Like, remember what I said about The Witcher? I don't know anybody who doesn't like The Witcher, except for me. And it's not because I love Henry Cavill. Loved him. But just because Larry doesn't like it doesn't mean The Witcher doesn't need to exist.
But see, the problem with that is not everyone, and I'm pointing my finger back at myself when I say this, not everyone is as open-minded as you are. You know, a lot of people have that, this is my show.
Yeah. I want to pick up a few comments real quick. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to come from the point of view, even if I didn't watch it, I wouldn't have anything to say on it. But I'm going to watch it, and Tasha mentioned this in her stream earlier today. I'm not even hate watching it. I want to come away feeling great about the episode. And there have been several. I mean, as much as I fuss about it sometimes, there's several in there that I'm like, oh, man, that's some of the best Star Trek we've got. Honestly, like 100%. So I just want more of those well-written, clever episodes. And I'm here for it, man. I'm not here to crap on it. I'm just going to have fun with it and, you know, voice my concern when I have them. That's how it is. That's why we're podcasting about it. But a few comments real quick. Wingrace mentions that I think that the model for children's shows, take big breaks and rerun the existing episodes a billion times. Unfortunately, it failed on Nick. So Paramount, Prodigy failed on Nickelodeon. See, this is where I come from too with that. I didn't ever look at it as a Nickelodeon show. I looked at it as a tit-pole Star Trek show. So if they were looking for it to be successful on Nick, I think they failed from the beginning. If they put so much behind the show too in the very beginning, man, I'm just puzzled. I'm still puzzled about it.
I knew it was a Nickelodeon show being produced, but I don't watch Nickelodeon, so I wouldn't have been aware of it all. That, because that's crazy. It's like you're putting it on two streaming platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I if their goal was to have it succeed on Nickelodeon, I don't know why that was their goal. And in that aspect, they probably did fail. Real quick, Prodigy Hiatus was after 10 of 20 episodes. And Tosh is like, that's like getting two seasons.
And it felt like two seasons. We, you know, we said that.
Yeah, I enjoyed both parts of it. Guys, we're going to wrap this thing up. We had a whole section where we're going to talk about how we want to review Lower Decks. We might save that for the next episode because I really want to come in. I have a list. I have an itinerary or a bullet points of how I want to review Lower Decks. And I think I'm going to have more fun with it because it's kind of more methodical with reviewing it. For me, instead of just looking at it and trying to figure out what the heck is going on, which I pretty much did in our first few seasons of reviewing it. But I have some, you know, I have some highlights of each episode that I want to pick out and talk about. But we'll talk about that on our next episode. Guys, thank you for joining me. It's been real fun. Is there anything you want to shout out or plug before we kind of wrap this thing up?
I do want to point one thing out. Kyle said earlier, Kyle, you remember what you said about sometimes they have a show and it's the premise, the same one, but it doesn't work. And they bring back that. There was a show called Living Single. Queen Latifah was on it. It's the exact same show as Friends.
Oh, absolutely.
And it didn't like. And Friends comes back, and Friends is like one of the most profitable shows in the history of TV.
Yeah,
it's the same exact premise. Yeah,
no, I mean, if you put and the fact that they came a season earlier on that fledgling Fox. You know, but they are the mold. You're 100% right that, you know, they successfully made it and they copied it and people don't even really think about Living Single,
which
I thought was awesome, by the way.
Yeah. I just wanted to get that out there.
Kyle, do you have anything you want to plug, sir?
I would say for anyone who does like crass humor and who does like, sci-fi space humor can check me out on Oz9 podcast. It's a comedy fiction podcast, oz-9.com.
You guys should definitely do a Star Trek episode. I would be down for that.
How could we do a Star Trek episode?
I don't know, man. Just
yeah, and how did I not know about this, Kyle?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Wait, I thought you knew.
No, I didn't know about this, man. You got to send me a link.
This is right up your alley if you like Lower Decks. It's oz-9.com.
Okay.
Yeah, good stuff. And that's produced, written, and edited by our friend Shannon.
Yes, Shannon Perry.
Cool.
Oh, I've got to see that.
Yeah, and Kyle, what role do you play on that podcast?
I am the illustrious narrator, too.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, boy.
I think I come in sometime in the second season, I think.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Everybody in the chat, I really appreciate it. I think we had Wynn Grace, Tasha, we had Retney, we had Dreamwalker, and maybe Justin, I can't remember. We had a good crowd in there. We thank you guys for coming. It's always fun when you're in the chat. We really appreciate it. And with that, we're going to end the episode. Of course, you can reach us at Discussing Trek on any of all social medias or hitting us up at feedback@discussingtrek.com. It's been fun, guys, and until next time, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.